This is The Rotunda, your podcast about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tremel Gomes.
And this is something I learned from Steve Andrews, actually, who's representing Senator Latvala. He had a big lawsuit against the governor a few years ago over public records. And he found out in reading the records that were released to him that the governor had a private email account.
We look into the many ways that some of our public officials are trying to keep us in the dark. Barbara Peterson with the First Amendment Foundation is our special guest.
Text messages that relate to public business are public records in Florida.
Also, we'll hear how the number of good jobs that pay well without requiring a bachelor's degree is growing in Florida and around the country.
Actually, in the skilled services industries, Florida was one of the states with rapid growth in those good jobs.
And the association executives around the state are flexing their muscles as they show just how much they contribute to Florida's economy.
Over a $3.7 billion impact to our state.
Frank Rudd with the Florida Society of Association Executives joins the program. All that and more coming up on episode 127 of The Rotunda. Welcome to the program. We've been following a few stories for the last several weeks here on The Rotunda. There is continued fallout from Hurricane Irma and the 14 patients who were left in the sweltering heat and perished at a Hollywood nursing home.
Governor Rick Scott holding daily conference calls with hospital and nursing home officials from around the state.
And during those calls, Governor Scott informed administrators and nursing home officials if at any time a facility needed help or needed to get assistance on the back end because you felt your facility was not getting their needs met, to please call the numbers that he provided and they will make sure that help was received.
Did he convey that this was his personal cell phone?
He did.
How did that make you feel?
I actually was very impressed.
That's CBS4's Jim DeFede interviewing the woman who called Governor Scott for help and was left without any. Natasha Anderson's voicemails were collected and deleted, according to the governor's office.
Anderson called Governor Scott's cell phone. The call went to voicemail, and several hours later, someone called her back.
My expectation was that we would get a better response.
That's a harder one. Voicemails aren't transitory. Voicemails are recorded, and you can keep a voicemail for as long as you own the phone. Mm-hmm. Same is true of text messages. That was the excuse of the city in Tallahassee. Text messages are transitory. Baloney. I've got text messages going back 6-7 years, as long as I've owned my phone. They're not transitory. They're recorded. Transitory is like, a conversation you have with someone that is not recorded. That's transitory. Mm-hmm. Voicemail's not transitory. I don't think the governor's office did anything illegal in deleting those voicemails. Ill-advised, but not illegal.
That's Barbara Peterson with the First Amendment Foundation. She's referencing an ongoing public records battle here in the city of Tallahassee with local media and public officials, where some of those public officials are caught in a web of possible corruption being investigated by the FBI and ethics boards. And then there is the governor's office deleting critical information.
Every public record is assigned retention value. By Department of State, the Division of Library and Information Services says that every record of any historical or archival importance has to be kept for X number of months or years. Junk mail, you can probably throw out. Other records, it's dependent on the content of the record, not whether it's via email or text or paper, have to be retained according to those retention schedules. And I believe voicemail, I'm not a retentions expert, but I believe voicemail can be deleted when it is received by the person for whom it's intended. So I think they were within the law to delete those voicemails. But as I said, I think it was ill-advised. Mm-hmm. It was a crisis. People died. And now we've got a he said situation. where the nursing home is saying, well, the governor told us to call, and we called and called and called. How many times did you call? What did you say on the call? So we don't have any record of what occurred, and yet it was catastrophic.
All right, so Barbara Peterson is our special guest on this episode of The Rotunda. We tackle a variety of topics, but you often see Peterson quoted across the country discussing and fighting for our right to know what our elected officials are up to. So let's jump right into the interview. Here's Peterson explaining the challenges of keeping our government open and transparent.
How about oversight and accountability? I mean, that's the purpose of our open government laws, is to provide the citizens with an opportunity to oversee government and hold it accountable for its actions. And that's what's happening right now in the city of Tallahassee, where you have the city of manager asking a personal favor of a lobbyist who represents clients before the city, asks this lobbyist for 4 football tickets worth, I'm told, $2,000. Why? Does that tell us anything about his professional judgment? Does it tell us anything about him personally? But mostly it's his professional judgment. I mean, and then, you know, to do this via text message where you have a record of it and then claim that you didn't do it. First, he claimed that he did not ask, or stated that he did not ask for those records. The city denied the Tallahassee Democrats' public records request, claiming there were no records responsive to the request. And now they're saying, oh, there were records, but they were destroyed. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing that citizens, I think, are very interested in. What favors are city officials getting from people who are asking the city to approve contracts and deals and things like that? So that's the traditional purpose of our open government laws, oversight and accountability.
And that's on the city level. What challenges are you having with your role on the state level, in the legislature?
Well, the legislature is subject to a different standard. So we have a constitutional right of access to the records and meetings of our government. And the right of access to records that's guaranteed in the Constitution applies to all 3 branches, but each one is subject to a different standard. And the same is true of meetings. There's a right of access to the meetings of state agencies and local governments. The legislature is subject to a different constitutional standard, and the court's subject to an even different standard. So the courts, we actually have very little issue with, usually, with access to courts. They're doing a very good job of putting their records online. You might have to pay for them, but access to public records isn't free. You have to pay the cost of providing those records. You shouldn't pay more than the cost, but you should. So the clerk's website does a very good job. I get very few complaints about access to court records. I get a lot of complaints about access to legislative records, because the right of access, which is guaranteed by the Constitution to legislative records, gives the legislature the right to adopt its own rules about how it's going to provide access to those records. And the standard that they've adopted for themselves is a far lesser standard than applies to your school board, your city council, your county commission, which are subject to the public records law, Chapter 119. The legislature is not.
And the key thing you mentioned is they have adopted for themselves.
Yes. They get to adopt their own rules. So, for example, if you wanted access to a senator's emails, you may or may not get them. But if you want the city manager's emails, you're going to get them, unless they're exempt from public disclosure, because there's a much stronger, higher standard of access. So we have problems with access to legislative records. We also have problems with access to legislative meetings. And you know this from covering the legislature in the final days of session. They're deciding all sorts of things after hours, behind closed doors, and they come out and all of a sudden there's a budget. This happened with the education bills last year. Mm-hmm. And the public is very upset about that. It's interesting because I just learned today, you know, the Constitutional Revision Commission is active and they're going to be making all of these proposed changes to the Constitution. And there's one I saw today, it's proposal number 81, that would hold the legislature to the same standard for meetings as applies to local governments. And that's huge. We've been trying to get that done for years, but it required a legislative change and the legislature wouldn't hear the bill. So this would put it in the Constitution.
So what consequences for the fiasco last session with those closed-door meetings and then we're seeing a budget out of magic out of thin air? What happens in those cases? How do you hold them accountable for not paying attention to what they're required to do?
You vote them out of office because there's no other remedy.
But the public, their memory, it's the public doesn't respond and, like, you know,
it's,
by the time it's on to something else.
This is the problem throughout Florida. It's not just the legislature. It's also state agencies and local governments. We have a great public records law. Mm-hmm. It's one of the best in the country. It's fabulous. We have a constitutional right of access. But there's no enforcement mechanism. So City of Tallahassee denies the Tallahassee Democrats' request or a citizen's request. The only alternative is to go to court, and you have to file suit in civil court alleging a violation of the public records law. That's really daunting for the average person. You're going to sue your government, and it can be very expensive. If you sue under the public records law or the open meetings law, if you sue and you win, you will get your attorney's fees and court costs. That's guaranteed by law. Now, the legislature changed that a little bit last year because we had some predatory public records requesters, people going out and making public records requests for seemingly the sole purpose of triggering a violation. Mm-hmm. And so the legislature changed the standard for getting attorney's fees last year. But if you've got a legitimate beef and you win, you're going to get your attorney's fees and court costs. But that's a big gamble. I mean, to go out and hire an attorney and absorb the costs if you lose, that's a gamble. And there are other states that have enforcement mechanisms in their law. So if your public records request is denied, you can seek review from like the Attorney General's office or the Office of Open Government. That's not the case in Florida. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly difficult when it comes to the legislature because of the separation of powers doctrine. Wow. So it's hard if they deny it. All you can do is really complain about it. And there's not much else you can do when it comes to the legislature.
So we can go on and this topic, it's so timely and important. Let's switch to an award that you're giving out this week in the name of Lucy Morgan.
Correct.
Why did you create this and what is it all about?
Well, Lucy is an institution in Florida and is probably one of the best investigative reporters in Florida. I think she's still, even though she's retired, what, now three times, I think she still has her finger in the pie. And what we're trying to do with the creation of this ward is highlight the importance of access to government information. You think about the stories that have been done that were completely dependent on access to public records and the fight to obtain those records, what the Miami Herald has done recently about the juvenile justice system. That, I think, is another very good example of the importance of the media and the public to be able to get to information that tells us what our government is doing wrong. And so Lucy sort of epitomizes that in the state of Florida. And Gilbert King epitomizes it sort of nationally Gilbert is our keynote speaker, Pulitzer Prize winner of a phenomenal book called The Devil in the Grove, about the story of four young African-American men who were wrongfully accused of raping a young white woman. Three of the four never made it to trial. They were killed. And that story was heavily dependent on Gilbert's ability to get access to government records. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people really understand sort of the historical importance, the societal importance of being able to get access to records that tells us what our government is doing. And frequently it's things that our government doesn't want us to know they're doing. So that's what the sort of the impetus behind this award is, to highlight how important it is that we're able to get those records that allow us to hold our government accountable.
And I'm sure it's a constant struggle, but what do we do when they do all they can, these government officials, to make sure it's not in the public records? Like when they create alternative emails, they use Gmail accounts and all of these things.
They call each other on the phone.
Call each other on the phone or have a meeting at a bar or something, as opposed to doing it where they would be required to have a public record, even though when it's in public record, some may fight against releasing it.
Right. First thing you can do is call us. The First Amendment Foundation operates a hotline, and we answer questions from anybody about Sunshine, the open meetings law, or the public records law. And while we can't give legal advice and we don't have the resources to give legal representation, we can help people. But it fascinates me. And this is something I learned from Steve Andrews, actually, who's representing Senator Latvala. He had a big lawsuit against the governor a few years ago over public records. And he found out in reading the records that were released to him that the governor had a private email account. So that's always what I tell journalists and citizens. Once you get the records, read them. Because you don't know what you'll find out if you actually read them. And I told a reporter that recently who was doing a story, a national magazine reporter, but he was trying to get access to records in Florida, and he'd gotten some emails, and I said, read them. Make sure you read them, because the person, the government official, had claimed he didn't use personal emails. It doesn't matter if it's a personal email account or a government email account. If the record relates to public business, it's a public record subject to disclosure under law. But there is that kind of obfuscation. This is what happened at the city of Tallahassee, where the city manager was texting on his phone. Text messages that relate to public business are public records in Florida. And you just have to be kind of savvy enough to know how to request, how to formulate your request so you get what you want. And that's where we can come in. We had a response from a woman here in Tallahassee. We wrote a letter to the city of Tallahassee saying, we think you're in violation of the public records law over the city manager's text messages. And we had a woman contact us and thank us for our letter. And she said, I used to think that I could make my position known through my vote. Now I know I also have to use my voice. And that's what people need to do. Tell your commissioner you don't like what the commission is doing. Write letters to the editor. Use Facebook. Use social media. And say, wait a minute, how did this happen? How frequently do we see a public body come into a meeting and make a radical decision with no discussion or no debate? We have access to the entire deliberative process. If they come in and vote to fire someone and they don't discuss it and they don't debate it, how did they come to that unanimous decision? Yeah. So ask questions, let it make your voice heard. That's not hard anymore. It used to be hard because the only way to really do it was to write a letter, call your city commission. I don't know if you've tried to call Congress lately, but you never get through. But now you've got social media.
Special thanks to Barbara Peterson with the First Amendment Foundation. The reception to honor Lucy Morgan is November 15th at the Governor's Club in downtown Tallahassee. Visit floridafaf.org to learn more about the foundation and to contact them if you've uncovered some wrongdoing and stonewalling with your government officials. Special note, I will be there in attendance for that special night. This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes, bringing you the stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. Each week, this program is supported by listeners like you. So please send your generous contribution by visiting rotundapodcast.com. It helps us to expand our reach and attract more listeners just like you. The program is featured on newspaper websites across the country. And you can follow us on social media via Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook at Rotunda Podcast. And again, we welcome your generous contribution and are very grateful for your support. Back to the program. In some other news, are you or your organization a member of an association? Well, there is some great news coming out of the Florida Society of Association Executives, and its president and CEO, Frank Rudd, is here to share the good news.
The associations in the state of Florida are doing well. They're thriving, surviving, and we were just anxious, really anxious to do a study to show exactly what the economic impact of associations are in the state of Florida, and we're just excited about the results that we got.
All right, so what are those results? What is it showing?
Well, it shows, first of all, you know, that the economic impact of the 1,000 largest associations in the state of Florida have over a $3.7 billion impact to our state. It shows that associations are growing. They continue to grow and provide steady employment for a lot of people in the state. And the big factor to me, I saw that meetings are not dead. People still like to go to various locations and meet face to face. So, and even though us, you know, as an association, we do so many more different ways of getting educational programs out, webinars, individual learning, it's still people like to meet face to face. They like to partake in the networking and the on-site educational programs, and are still spending a lot of money in our state doing that.
And I know that's something you guys are really known for, holding amazing conferences around the state and really pushing those face-to-face interactions. And it's attracting many businesses, even from out of state, correct?
Absolutely, it is. And we're so fortunate that living in Florida that we have so many wonderful locations that we can do that at. And I always hear my counterparts in different groups from some of the Southeast states are always coming to Florida to meet, and like, well, we stay in Florida because there's so many wonderful places to be a part of and participate in the economy here.
So what will you do with this good news? $3.7 billion. That will certainly put a pep in your step.
It does, and I think it's something that we can use as we validate what we do as an association, but also I think it's able something we can use backyard up at the Capitol when we talk with legislators and show the economic impact of associations. A lot of our members have also already expressed a desire that they can take this information, couple it with what they do as a state association, and combine it and show individual legislators what the economic impact of is in the state of Florida for them. I think in addition, it's just something we can show our associate members, our people who we do business with, that associations are a thriving part of this economy.
All right. Well, Frank, thank you so much for joining the program.
Thank you, Tramell. And I can't believe it. It's only been a year. It feels like you've been around, you know, running this thing forever. So
about a year ago, I had the pleasure of talking Florida politics at one of the association's luncheon. It was a great crowd and a room full of power players representing all corners of Florida. Be sure to visit FSAE.org to learn more about the association. They also have one of the best job announcement boards if you're interested in breaking into the association industry. And speaking of jobs, turning to some other jobs news. A new study shows there is a steady growth in jobs in Florida and across the country for people without bachelor's degrees earning a medium income of $55,000 per year. The report from the Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce found that over the past 25 years, nearly half of the states in the U.S. have added jobs that pay well without requiring a four-year degree. Neil Ridley is the state initiative director for the Georgetown Center. He says Florida saw growth in both blue-collar fields, such as manufacturing, and the skilled services industry, such as healthcare.
Actually, in the skilled services industries, Florida was one of the states with rapid growth in those good jobs. In fact, the growth rate outpaced the national average by a fair amount.
On the other hand, the report found good jobs for workers with high school diplomas and those without are on the decline. However, the growth in good jobs has been most beneficial to workers with associate's degrees. Rod Duckworth over at the Florida Department of Education's Division of Career and Adult Education says over the last several years, the state has been preparing students to enter the skilled workforce.
It's an area that we've been trying to encourage, you know, more students to go into take career and technical education courses, obtain industry certifications, and it really helps to reinforce that we're on the right track.
Since last year, Duckworth says Florida has issued more than 100,000 industry certifications earned by students in middle and high school, ensuring they are ready to be part of a diverse workforce. To learn more about the report, it's online at goodjobsdata.org. That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to Barbara Peterson with the First Amendment Foundation and Frank Rudd with the Florida Society of Association Executives, Rod Duckworth with the Florida Department of Education, and Neil Ridley with the Georgetown University Center on Education. Remember to follow us at Rotunda Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Also, check us out at rotundapodcast.com, where you can contribute to this program and suggest topics and story ideas. And as always, be sure to join us next week for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.